am a child, a survivor of domestic violence as well. My mother was murdered in front of me when I was one by my sperm donor.
In addition, you've got some of the abusers that represent themselves, and they will sit there and ask you questions. And that is horrific in and of itself. There's a whole other level of anger if you have the ability to stab someone.
1,000%. Because you have to feel that.
You have to feel that.
I didn't know about prison clickbait. And if y'all never heard it, let me tell you about it.
Oh, I have not. What's prison clickbait? I got to Google.
I had to become political. That pissed me off. I don't want to read about things and do
things. I don't want to be political either.
Pissed. I'm trying to be a hottie on a boat. Okay. But no, I can't be. Because the world is shitty.
You can still be a hottie on the boat, like on the weekends. Just go be a hottie on the boat.
However, okay. You want to be wooed by someone else, woo yourself. You are your own star player. You are the person you should be dating first any fucking way.
Oh, and I love that for so many reasons. I do.
Yeah. I can have one thought one day and be a totally different person. So I can't agree to what I said the other day. I was in a different mind state. Right. And so being able to go, well, you said on November that you would give me a blowjob anytime. Well, today it's December now. It's a different day. I don't feel like that.
I see it all the time where women are crucified for embracing their sexuality. And I think it's bullshit. And so do I think that we should have a link to this toy on the page, on the show notes? Absolutely. Because you know what? If it's going to take someone else to break down the barriers and fucking A, let's do it. But enough of being shameful about what we enjoy about our bodies. Our lives are so short and our lives are so spent with dealing with bullshit and hard stuff, becoming survivors after going through horrific things. And we're going to get shamed for wanting to enjoy something.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I'm a lifetime student. I just got a master's degree in legal studies because I'm petty and I need to know the things. Michelle, you Google, I get a degree. Okay.
I have so much to learn. The information contained in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love Less Law. We have a fabulous guest. Today, I'm joined by Jiminika Eborn, a trauma expert, survivor advocate, comprehensive sex educator, and founder of Tending the Garden, which is a nonprofit dedicating to supporting survivors through community and healing. From consulting on trauma-informed storytelling in Hollywood to serving as a former mental health specialist for All Elite Wrestling, helping people navigate what happens after harm. She's got a fascinating story about her life, the journey she's gotten to get her where she stands today, and how she helps others. Also learned that unlike me, who GTS it, which is Google that shit, she actually gets herself an education and adds more letters behind her name. So I got to tell you, thank you so much for being here and welcome to Love Less Law. Tending the Garden. Tell me about that.
Tending the Garden is a nonprofit that I came up with at a 10-day silent retreat. I actually came up with it the first day. I'm Gemini, Cancer, Aries. For the babies that it matters, it matters. And I came up with it the first day, the concept. And so a Vipassana retreat, you can't read, you can't write, you can't look anyone in the eye. You're just in meditation inside. And so I'm just processing.
One. How in the F do you do that?
I've done it three times. I know. I'm chaotic. I don't.
No, that's impressive. If I had to go an entire day without talking, I'd have a problem.
Yeah. I love it. You know why I love it? It's because no one needs me. And I am someone that is a lot of people's center and someone always needs me. But there for really like 12 days, the only person that needs me is me. So it's like, honestly, one, you come out looking great. You're eating veggies. You can't really do much. Your skin's glowing. You have time to do skincare. I always come out shining. And then it centers you. You really have to think about all those things that life is like too busy. It's crazy. You're like sitting there like, I don't have anything. And it's like family. And I don't want to talk about family. And it's like, so anyway, we're going to process. What about men in your life? Process.
No.
And it's like,
no.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last time I did it, I accidentally volunteered to like wake the women up because they separate you by gender, men and women. They only think there's two. And I volunteered accidentally. I was sitting there and my hand went up and I was like, what the fuck? And I had to get up at 4:30 a.m. every morning and it was dark, but it was so beautiful. And I just did a little thing and like went to the corners of each building and woke the women up for early meditation.
I can't even fathom like having to sit with my own thoughts for that many days. I end up in the loony bin afterwards. But that's how Tim in the
Garden got here. I'll take you back even further. So I was raped at 21 and I didn't tell anyone until 27, 28, when I became a comprehensive sex educator, because I started writing articles and I had something coming out and I was like, ooh, I should tell people and my family and my wife. And so for me, I was raped. I was studying criminal justice. I actually went back and finished my criminal justice recently, but I was studying criminal justice and I needed something. I became a rape crisis counselor. Like I became the person that you had sit with you while you were getting your SART examined after you were assaulted. So I did that for like 6 months, 6 months to like a year. And that for me, honestly, was the most humbling thing I had ever done in my 21 baby years. To come into a space where someone has just had the most fucking horrific thing happen to them in the stories that they were retelling as they're talking to the SART nurse and like sitting there and they're like, will you just hold my hand? Absolutely. Will you tell me a joke? Absolutely. My rape is very different in ways. It wasn't like graphic. I wasn't harmed in the capacity. I woke up and someone was standing over me naked with a condom on that I had been with before. Yep. And I froze. So now I have the language to freeze and fawn and all of these things. My experience is a bit different. And for me, I'm one of those people that's like, we got to keep going, right? That's healthy and unhealthy that I learned from my grandmother, and I'm still working on that. But it's like, I understood more about myself as I was helping other people. And it just kept going. And I think in that, it's such a trust that people gave upon me that I said, oh, I have to keep doing this because it hasn't stopped. A stranger, listen, I will be out with a martini and a joint. And someone's like, oh my God, do you work in mental health? When I was 5, I'm like, no, I don't think it's a good time. They're like, it's fine. I'm like, it's not. It's not a good time. But I am thankful to be who I am. And I think it's also just like a personal who I am energy wise, taking care of myself, being aware that people go, you seem like a safe person. You're whatever it is, you're not going to harm me. You're going to give me some tools. And so it's just been like that, I think, for me. It's been very humbling all around. So I processed it. I kept thinking about it. And the reason it came to me is because I had already been out as being a sexual assault, a rape survivor, because I think it's always very specific that we should use correct language when we can, a rape survivor and sexual assault. And so I was thinking every time I would go to look for something or like resources and things, nothing ever looked like me. It always looked like thin white women. And I was like, statistically, they are not the highest amount of people that are harmed, right? Trans women, Black women, women of color. I'm not saying they don't, but if these are the numbers, why isn't anyone looking like me? And like I would see things and the reviews would be like, I went and I felt unsafe or they didn't believe me. And I'm like, that's crazy. And so I originally created Tending the Garden. It was going to be like a 5-day retreat for women of color. And it was going to be centered around education, sexual education, because I think a lot of us don't have good education, body awareness. So like body love and like understanding yourself. And then also mental health, because all of those things are so connected. So there was going to be like different days and awareness. What I quickly came to do was like put it together. I came back, I told my manager at the time, and we started working on it. We were supposed to have our first retreat 2020. As we know, Miss Covita came in and said, stay in the house, everyone.
She's like, think again.
yeah, try again.
Try again, in not turn, happening this time. No.
The retreat center refused to give us our money back. So it was like $30,000 of fundraised money. Emmy Loa. Yeah, we name people at this point.
I was like, name them. Name them. Who those SOBs?
They refused to give us our money back. We were well within our rights. We were like, keep that. But the reason why also, because it was all fundraised money. And also they wanted to keep the survivors money that had also put money towards them. So luckily that year I ended up getting a grant from American Express. So I gave all the survivors their money back. And then I did online programming. And everything that I do with Tending the Garden, I'm hiring other survivors. So we did a summit, a 2-day summit, fucking with like 20 plus amazing people and teachers. And literally in a few weeks, we're doing an in-person like flower building and like connecting and grounding. We're just trying to do things that aren't just so fucking sad. And so Tending the Garden has grown from being just this retreat to now there are different pillars. And so now my focus are those of survivors that have been marginalized. So cis men, women of color, trans women, disabled folks, right? Like sex workers, college age folks. These folks have high numbers and are constantly overlooked. What I did bump up against was I did have white women go, well, there's nothing here for me. And I said, are you not in 1824? There's sex workers that are white. There's all these things. It's just these people have this larger thing, being black or white might be smaller. And so there is overlap in communities and things. And we did have an online community. It didn't do as much as I wanted, but there's resources there. People can still use it. It will always live there. And one day we'll revive it. So Tending the Garden was my baby. It is my baby. We've got a lot of time together in silence and in tears, frustration. But I'm so excited that we get to be with flowers now. But I also know when I see people's faces and how I prep people. So anytime I talk about my story, I go, I'm going to say a few hard things. Is that okay? And I wait and I check in. I'm like, let's get some eyes. If it's like, I don't know. I'm like, well, then I won't say it. And they're like, no. So yeah, my journey, it's also, we were talking about this before. I am a child and a survivor of domestic violence as well. My mother was murdered in front of me when I was one by my sperm donor. What I learned actually in the last few years, because my grandmother, funny, the police documents are below me, but my grandmother gave me the documents a few years ago. What I learned was I was also almost kidnapped. And I said, oh, that's interesting learning your 30s. I was almost kidnapped, but his sister stopped him before he fled. And it's so interesting. Again, I was having a conversation about this yesterday and today. He was supposed to go in front of the judge yesterday. So he is a murderer. He murdered my mother. He murdered an elderly couple, a bartender, and a pimp in Vegas. Vegas had the death penalty. That's where he went. He pled insanity, I believe. And they lowered the sentence. So death row is gone. And so he has never been held accountable for my mother's murder and still has yet to be. So they brought him to Riverside County, where I live, and they brought him here a while ago. And before we even knew he was here, because I always checked, so I didn't get notified, which was a wild year. I checked and I was like, what the hell? We got a call and it was from someone who was interviewing and they're like, oh, we just wanted you to know he's here in Riverside and we're going to prosecute him. We want to know what you want us to do with him. And I was like, what? Crazy, right? So I am the, again, I am the center for a lot of people, including in my family. So I am technically the oldest and the youngest, right? I am the oldest grandchild, but the youngest because my grandparents adopted me and I have two aunts. Correct. And so it's a weird balance of still having the most sense in between. So when that happened, I was the one that went to each family member. If there's something you would like, what would you like me to say? What would you like me to say? So then I went and sat with this detective and asked questions. He's like, well, what would you like? I said, is there a Dropbox?
Like, right? What do you like, mean? Can I A, B, C, D, E, all of the above?
Right. And so I just said that simply, I want him to be held accountable to the highest level because he changed my family's entire life. What I didn't tell you was in 2016 is the only time I've ever heard from this man. I didn't know about prison clickbait. And if y'all never heard it, let me tell you about it.
Oh, I have not. What's prison clickbait? I got to Google. I Googled prison clickbait because I was like, ooh, I've not heard this term. I want to look this up. Jake knows me and I'm like, oh, wait, let's Google.
I just made it up. Well, I made it up a few years, but you'll understand as soon as I tell you.
Okay, so tell me. I'm dying to know.
I I was becoming a sex educator and learning to be the speaker that you see today. I was not like this. And so I was gone learning at a conference, and my grandmother called and said, "You got a letter from that man who says he's your father." And I said, "Okay, what'd you do with it?" She's like, "It's here waiting." And I said, "Okay." So I came back a week later. I called my best friends and I was like, "Hey, I got this thing." They said, "What do you need?" I said, "I want crab in time." They said, "Absolutely." So we went and had crab.
Did you say crab?
Crab. Yes.
Okay.
Seafood.
I'm just going to ask, are you a crab dipper in like butter, melted butter?
Yes.
Like, how do you like your crab? I'm just, because some people don't like it with the butter. Yeah. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Yeah. But okay. Just curious. Like squirrel. Just Texas. Wondering.
My family's from Texas and North Carolina. We like butter.
Oh. Oh, yeah, you like butter. Yeah, you like butter. Okay. I was just making sure, because there's some weirdos that don't eat butter with their crab. I'm like, what's wrong with you? So you went for crab and thyme with butter, with butter and thyme.
Yeah. So I read the letter before I went and saw my friends, because I didn't want to be surprised. I wanted to process it with them, but I wanted. So my grandparents have never seen this letter to this day. I actually don't know where it is. In the letter, I'll give you a summary, because basically he goes, "Hey, I'm alive." That was the first line. I was like, "Oh, you think I'm dumb too? That's crazy. You should have Googled me." He said, "Hey, I'm alive." Yeah. Oh, it gets better. He goes, "I learned how to read and write in prison. I don't know what your aunt and grandmother told you." This is where the letter really started and ended for me. He goes, "Things happened between me and your mother. Sorry about that." He beat my mother and bludgeoned her to death. So yes. Yeah. And then proceeded to that was it.
I'm trying to think of the appropriate word to use for that kind of, I guess, for it's not an acknowledgement, right?
No.
It's an excuse. No. It's a didn't like a really do off. It.
It's like a comment.
Right. Like, yeah. Your mother and I had some arguments. Yeah. Not you beat her and bludgeoned her to death.
Yeah. The prison clickbait of it all, when the envelope came, on the outside it said, "This is your dad. You have a sister." So that's why I'm like, clickbait, because you want me to open it. And then proceeds to talk in the letter about some girl. And then goes, "If you want to know more, write me back." That's prison clickbait to me.
That's clickbait. Crazy. That is 100% clickbait.
I have a lot of commas. As Jake said, I have a lot of commas and things that I do. So in 2016, I had just come back from something, it doesn't exist anymore, called Sex Geek Summer Camp. And that used to exist, and we would all go to the West Virginia, and it was a bunch of us, I know. And we learned different aspects, because I knew I wanted to be a sex educator, but what did that mean? And so it was like 60 of us. I did it 3 years in a row, came out with a group of folks that we now call ourselves the squad. There's 16 sex educators that, like, if I ever need anything, a question, the group text, it's wild and boring at the same time. I can totally understand why that
thread is either like on fire or like snooze fest. There's nothing in between.
Or it's like, we're all older now. It's like, are you going through the change? Are you sweating? What are you using? Right? Like, everyone's hot.
These fucking hot flashes.
What's the skincare giving? Oh, also, did you see this new vibrator? It does this.
Oh, don't even get me started on the rose. You know, but for some people, like, the rose is where it's at. Just saying.
The rose exists, but there's also toys that do the same thing that I think are better.
Ooh, give me a list.
It was a beautiful time in the sense of it, like, you got to go with a bunch of people. I've never been to West Virginia. It also, in all honesty, my time there was awful. All of my planes got messed up. They lost my luggage. I showed up in West Virginia with the clothes on my back, sad. I was like, I shouldn't do this. But then it worked out. Eventually, my clothes came right before I left. And I came out with friends and careers and doors opened. It definitely opened the door for me. So that is why I know so many things about sex toys. A lot of my friends work at the companies. My husband, who is a beautiful homosexual man, is coming into town tomorrow, who also works at a company. I got riding toys in my garage. I've got toys everywhere. I have given away thousands of dollars of sex toys.
Okay. So then I have another follow-up question. Yeah. Can I send you my address? Kidding. Totally kidding. The industry is going to Burbank.
So
I want to go back to this conference.
Personally, I go for two reasons. One, I want to see what new things are out there where they actually think about survivors' bodies beforehand. See what things are welcoming. See what things could be starter toys. I also like to get free shit. I'm not going to lie. I love free things. And they give a lot of free things.
Who doesn't like free things? I mean, really? You said something about victim-centered sex toys. Mm-hmm. Like that think about the victim first, right? Mm-hmm. That was really interesting for me. That caught my attention. Can you tell me more about what you mean by that?
Absolutely, I can. I think that there's a lot of toys that are made, one, that are male-centered and mimic, you know, being interacted with a penis owner. So it's like a connection there. A lot of people like more toys that are not phallic-like, that look like the rose, not phallic at all. It's very welcoming. It's opening. So when I think about first survivors, for those of us that want to get reconnected with sex, so that's a lot of the work that I do, is I love to work with folks, men, women, non-binary, whoever, whatever, reconnecting you with your sexuality. That is one of my favorite things to do, is one of the classes I teach. And so when we're getting reconnected, after we've been raped, after we've been sexually assaulted, there might be times when all those things you used to love and ways you wanted to be touched, now you go, fuck no. Now they're fuck yep. no's. They used to be hell mm-hmm. yes, now they're fuck no's. And so one of the things that I do is I will set up my clients and I have them go through self-dates. And people go, well, that's boring. And I'm like, you haven't heard how we do it.
You're like, wait a minute. Time out.
Yeah.
Let me explain.
Yeah. So when we do the self-dates, it builds up to you getting to figure out what kind of toys you even might want. So I'll give you the gist of how I do it. And so one, it's all about grounding. The way that I actually have them starts with something with food. One, your taste buds, the grounding aspect. So either you cook, because it's a date. So either you're cooking or you're going out to eat, you get dressed up, you want to be comfy. It's a date. However, okay. You want to be wooed by someone else, woo yourself. You are your own star player. You are the person you should be dating first any fucking way.
Oh, and I love that for so many reasons. I do.
Yeah. Date yourself. Get dressed up. Don't.
No, you should dress. You should date yourself. I mean, yeah, you really should. That's not just always. For survivors. That's,
no, it's a human aspect.
As a human aspect. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Squirrel moment.
No.
But no. Tell them to date themselves.
It's perfect. And the reason we have people do that, the reason I have people do that is, again, things have changed. Even if we want to think it hasn't, things have changed and we have to learn new parts of ourselves. So mm-hmm. We're going to feed ourselves. We're going to move our bodies. It could be a kitchen dance party. One of my favorites, you know.
That's the best kind because no one's watching.
No one's watching. Or if you're like, no, you want to walk. You want to do yoga. I don't care what you want to do, but we're going to move our body. Why? Because we're starting to loosen up and we are activating different parts, right? So there's that aspect. Then from there, again, these also don't have to be the same day. You have to get comfortable with yourself. It's a building block. So maybe one day you'll do one, two. The third one is you're going to bathe. People go, I shower. Some of y'all don't shower well. If we're not, if we're just using our hands.
Some of you stink.
Some of you stink.
Why are you looking at me, Michelle?
You just learned about soap during the pandemic, and that was horrifying for a lot of us. Okay?
It's expensive. What do you, ladies, come on now.
It's not.
Listen,
it's
just not. Dove. Just go get some Dove soap. Okay, you don't need to get fancy soap. Just some Dove soap.
Basics.
We'll do wonders.
Okay, perfect.
The basics. Dove, but Dove. I want you to take a shower or a bath, but use those things. You're like, oh, I'm going to use that bath later. I'm going to do this. It should be luxurious. Love on yourself. Really scrub. Get out and moisturize. Why? Because we don't have an ashy family. We moisturize internally and externally. If it's a lotion, a cream, an oil, we all have dry skin. I know some of us think we don't. You all have dry skin and should be using sunscreen every day. All of us.
White people, you need to moisturize.
I just, she said it. I second
it. I'll say it. You need to moisturize.
It's good for you. You know what that helps? Wrinkles. You know who's going to keep aging beautifully? You know who's not if you don't moisturize?
The whiteies.
People.
No, the whiteies. So we got to moisturize.
The whiteies.
You do. You do. You should.
No, we do.
After the bathing, you're going to go to your bedroom.
He's like, I'm going to have to edit so much. But here's why. Okay. Like, I look at my skin. I can't see if it's dry or ashy. Like, you don't. But you got to fucking moisturize. So you stay young, looking young. That's why some old white people look like they should have moisturized 20 years ago.
That's also smoking and drinking and other things. But sun damage is really – the sun is so much more potent now because of the UVA rays, and it's really
– I put SPF on every day.
You're smart because you can go outside, and that's the thing is the rise in skin cancers is really huge, and self-care should start when you don't need it. You really should start when you're young.
Oh, what? Like vitamin C, I started using vitamin C on my skin like in my early 30s.
Yeah. So right? Skincare. Yeah, exactly.
Skincare. Yeah. Well, internal care, fuck. I'm still dealing with that. But at least externally, we look okay.
Fuck. Take your skincare down to your neck and your chest, your hands.
I do that. Yeah. Hands are the giveaway. Hands are absolutely the giveaway.
You teach them to moisturize. Now, have you given them the trick that they don't fully dry off? That they moisturize while they're still kind of damp to emulsify the water into their skin?
Oh, they should know that, but I don't care about that much. The moisturizing is also the slow aspect of you figuring out what touch and reconnection feels like. So every step that I do, it's fun and sometimes it's weird, but there is an intention for everything. So then after you moisturize, you feel good, you put a little perfume on, whatever, then we figure out what touch feels like for you again. So you lay down, you're hanging out in your room, wear whatever you want. Be fully clothed. I don't care. It's however you want to experience it. But literally sit with yourself and start to notice it with the moisturizing. You start to do different pressures, touch different areas. Maybe somewhere you're like, oh my God, I used to love being squeezed right there. Now you're like, no. You're going to start to feel, do I like strong touch there? Do I want soft touch? Do I not want to be touched there? So that's why we have you do that aspect of the moisturizing and the slowing down. And then you do that in the bedroom. Why do you do it in the bedroom? Because most of the time, that's where you're going to fornicate. And so even getting your mind prepared of what it feels like to be on your back, to be on your side, to be in different positions, that's another aspect upgrade from the touch. Why? Because when we're assaulted, those positions, they might fuck us up now. Maybe I can never be on my back again. Maybe it has to be this angle or this position. I have some survivors that I work with. They're like, Jim, I don't know how to be anywhere but on my stomach because that feels safe for me. And so we work on different positions and angles by themselves. And then we go, okay, we haven't even touched a genital. And you're like on the fifth step of this date. And then you go, okay, slowly touch where you feel an erogenous zone is, maybe your ears, maybe your chest, maybe the inner thigh. And then you build up to getting near genitals until you feel comfortable. And then it's like, okay, think about maybe the toys you have used, the toys you have, the ones you've wanted to, pull them out. Look at them. Really look at them. See if they still feel connected to you. Or now you might be like, I used to like a thrusting toy. Now I want something that's rumbly. And so as educators, we think about, you know, is it going to specifically like thrust in and out? Is it a rumbly toy in this different sensations? Is it for clitorises? Is it for anuses? Is it for penises? So there's different things. So when you asked about the toys, when I'm looking for survivors, I'm thinking, is it something that can pinpoint something? Some people want something that only touches one area and they have toys like that. Something that doesn't look phallic. Tons of stuff like that. Something that's not a specific color. I have some folks who are like, I can't be near pink shit because they had trauma that involved, you know, centralizing childhood or little girls. They're like, I don't fuck with pinks and purples. I want something green, blue, and that can be across different genders. So when I think about that, I'm like, is this hard? Who is that welcoming to? A lot of times I'm thinking of, does it also change temperatures? There's new toys now that they can warm up. You know, they have toys that also really cool. You can figure out different like tightening of your vulva back and forth, your vagina, figuring that out. And it's like a game. So you're understanding your body again and what control feels like. So there's so many aspects that like I go and look for. I look at colors. I look at how they feel. I look at the bendability. I look about, can I reach my body? I'm long, but everyone isn't long. Does that feel vulnerable in that position? Like bigger bodies, my friends are like, I can't touch that. I got a stomach to go around. So also, is it an accessible toy for bodies, right? So these are the things that like I think about for survivors, because survivors look so different in many capacities, and also like the things that aren't normal. Like for guys, there's a lot of like cock rings. There's so many other things now. And like, I also want penis owners to know there's sex toys for you. Like you're also allowed. It is not just for folks that have vulvas. And they're not gendered. They also have so many things that are non-binary, created by non-binary people, that there's options. So things that don't even go on your body, there's humpers, there's bumpers, there's riding toys. Some people like things that no one else has to touch them. Like I have a riding toy in my garage right now. No one has to touch you. You can have a good time by yourself. And so that's what I mean when I say about
toys. I'm Googling. I have so much to learn. I was married. I got married like in 2002. Dating my ex-husband in 2000. I've been on basically one date since like 2000. This is all new to me. I'm learning like at 50, which is really kind of sad.
Michelle, this is my jam. Why are you giving Michelle my phone number, y'all? This is literally, I do the consulting all the time. Michelle, are you in my client after this? What's happening?
We got to pace Michelle. Michelle is an all in or all out type personality.
Yeah, so that's really, I dive all the way in or.
It's all in or all out with Michelle. So I think that one.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, boy. What's going on, Michelle? She made a discovery.
Writing toy.
Oh, yeah. I Googled. I feel sorry for people that have to look at my Google history.
I don't. If it's your enemy, they can probably utilize it.
Oh my goodness, that's okay.
Yeah, I have a well, so. I have a motor bunny in my garage. If you look up motor bunny, I have one of those in my garage.
I'm Googling.
Michelle needs new gifts to brand for the Love Us Law brand. So if we could get a bunch of these and maybe put the logo on it, just so because to
put
be
the
fair,
lips on it.
You know what? I'll leave that to you. Whatever you want to.
Listen, hello.
What do we got?
I just Googled, but she told me to Google.
What?
It's a writing toy.
Yeah, we'll have to put that link in the show notes.
It is
okay, but here's why it's also important.
Yeah.
Women are not taught how to enjoy their bodies at all. We are taught, it's made shameful. It's made that if we like sexual activity, then somehow we're whores. Because God forbid a woman like pleasure. I mean, that's the this is as someone that has not so much now, but back when I first started the practice of law, I remember a judge who's since passed that if you were a woman, you had to come to court in a skirt and pantyhose in his court. Like legit, that. This was, and that was 2003, 2004. Okay. So this wasn't even like forever. It wasn't like the 1950s. This was in the 2000s. Judge Baca, he's since passed, but if you were a woman, you better be wearing a skirt. Like I remember when I was at UT in business school, one of my MIS professors, it was like one of the introductory in like computer classes, basically told us that for interviews as women, we had to wear skirts to interviews, for professional interviews. Otherwise, we wouldn't get hired. And that was 1995, 96. And Jake, you've heard the story. When I was like 6, 7 months pregnant with my middle son, yeah. I had another attorney like come ask me to sit on his lap in the judge's chambers. Okay? So, and then someone who has... You can't get a position of power unless you've slept your way to the top, right? And so, like, I see it all the time where women are crucified for embracing their sexuality. And I think it's bullshit. And so do I think that we should have a link to this toy on the page, on the show notes? Absolutely. Because you know what? If it's going to take someone else to break down the barriers and fucking A, let's do it. But enough, like enough of being shameful about what we enjoy about our bodies. Our lives are so short and our lives are so spent with dealing with bullshit and hard stuff. becoming survivors after being going through horrific things, and we're going to get shamed for wanting to enjoy something? Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah, which is so hard to get to, like you said, because even in the sex ed classes that I took beforehand, it's never about pleasure. It's always about how to not get an STD, but
and how
really,
not to get pregnant.
It's not really. Yeah, it's really
it's how not to get pregnant.
Unless I don't like it's never about how you should enjoy things, how pain isn't normal. Like it's information, and that means slow down and ask questions and check in, and how lube is not for sluts. It actually is good for all of us. I don't care what your body does. Lube is your friend. All holes, set your mouth. Unless you want a little flavored, whatever.
Yeah. And there are different types of lube. Some work better than others.
They do. There's hybrids, there's silicone, there's water-based, there's flavored. They exist. And
oh, wait, which ones? You can let me know later.
All of these things are so important to survivors, to women, to us existing in all these spaces. And a lot of us weren't allowed.
No, we weren't.
A lot of us weren't allowed. And still aren't, right? And if we look at, here we go. If we look at what's happening in the world now, we're not allowed to exist unless we are here to make babies for others. Because how many states right now, abortions are quite dangerous for us when we're trying to take care of our bodies. So...
don't even get me started about Texas. Don't even get me started.
Revved. I know. I have a person in Houston that I'm like,
oh, this, and I normally avoid politics. And I understand the people that are pro-lifers. I get all of that. Why should you be able to tell me what I'm going to do with my body?
Yeah.
Like, you don't tell me what kind of lipstick I can wear. And yes, I know it's not the same thing, but I'm the one that has to carry. I'm the one that has to go through it. I'm the one that has to live with that decision, whether good, bad, or, you know what I mean? Like, and so some person in the legislature who is probably more freaky in the bedroom than they're Absolutely. Ever willing to admit, and have probably gotten their significant others or their side pieces, you know, end of pregnancy stuff. But yet they're passing the laws. Until a man has to give birth, it'll never change. Until a man actually has to go through what it takes and the emotional toll, the physical toll.
Your body's never the same. I don't want
it's
children.
It's never the same. I've had three boys, right?
Bless you.
One to shock after my first one. Second one was a little bit easier. And third one was, I was high for like 2 days. So don't remember much of it. It was great. But it fundamentally changed your brain. And the actual studies show, Jake, I don't know if you know this, but male pregnancies actually change my brain chemistry. Like each one of my boys has left some of their DNA in my brain. That's just how it works. It fundamentally changes who we are. I mean, it really does. And I breastfed all three of my kids. And it's funny because you really lose a sense of modesty when you've had three C-sections and you've breastfed. Because I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's not that big of a deal, guys. I'm like, they're just, you know, they just fed my kids. But I was, so if you look at a C-section, I think there's like 20 people in the room at each time. So I had, at that particular time with three children, probably 60 people see me naked and cut open. You know.
It's still about power. And if they can't fully be in control of everything, it's, because rape is never about sex. Sex is easy. Right. I am someone that thinks sex is easy. We can buy it. There's plenty of people that are like bored. I could go outside. Michelle and I could go outside right now and be like, I'd like to have sex. The cars would stop.
Yep.
Right. It's very easy. But it's so different. It's quite horrifying, actually, how easy it is.
Yeah. No barking. No, listen, women could literally.
I won't bark. I'll shake.
Put a sign up and say, hey, I want some. And you'd have a line of cars.
Yeah. So it's not about that. It really is just about power and the dynamics. Again, rape is about controlling someone. Rape is about, oh, you said no. Oh, okay. Then let me show you what no means.
Yeah,
it's
not.
Let me show you what no feels like.
And yeah, I don't think rape is not about pleasure at all.
No. It hasn't been. And it's so interesting that the act of this power, it isn't just the sexual act. It changes your brain. It changes what fear and safety looks like. When I talk to clients, I always talk about safety. Most people just think, oh, what's outside of us, right? Like, is anything near me? Do I need a gun? But internally, you might be spiraling. And personally, I think that internal safety is what can kill you versus the outside. Sure, someone's coming at you. That internal processing, that doesn't leave you. That's what you have to sit with.
The internal processing is what, the best way I can describe it is when your like gut turns in on itself and you've got mm-hmm. that like unsettling, like it almost makes you like, not least for when it hits me, it almost makes you nauseated, like, cause you just don't feel safe. And it's hard to describe it unless you've been through it. And for each person, it's different, right? What they're, how they feel. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like my stomach turning on itself and then, oh, it's yeah. all, it's the worst feeling. And I agree. The internal is way worse than the external.
Mm-hmm. Bruises heal. I always tell people like bruises heal, scars heal. But those thoughts, the fear, the safety, the looking over your shoulder. I often tell folks, that, I'll ask them, when's the last time you took an intentional breath? And they'll go, what? I'm like, when is the last time? They go, right now? And I'm like, the reason I ask is a lot of us are walking around not breathing enough for what we actually need because we're so fucking concerned about what's coming and what's next. And it doesn't matter your gender, especially in 2026. None of us know what's next. So all of our fucking systems are so lit up in different ways. People's sleep is different. The way that we eat is different. The way that we hang out with people is different. Dating is different. Looking at your family is different because now you're like, oh, what about you too? Like, everything has our nervous systems in such an uprising that none of us are actually ourselves, right? Everyone's trying to be normal, but also I think there's an acceptance even after being a survivor and being in traumatic situations, which I think this presidency is a traumatic situation. It's a continued thing on how we have to navigate because we are not going to be that same person. We're not going to be the same people whenever this fucking ends. We're going to be different people. We're going to have to learn new parts of ourselves. Same things with survivors. It's not our fucking choice. I didn't choose to be raped. I didn't choose to be raped or sexually assaulted. It happened. But now it's on me to figure out what I need. And that also fucking sucks that it's never on the person that causes harm.
Like, and it's never, never.
No, it's never on the onus of them. We have to learn how to communicate. We have to learn where to get the doctors. They continue on with their life. And they might actually get a goddamn documentary if they murder us or they rape us. You know, and it's multiple. And what pisses me off, here we go, in the true crime world, and I have this conversation often, is it's gotten a lot better, but also we're constantly centering the people that cause harm instead of the people that actually need to be centered because their lives were not consensually touched. Those lives will never be the same. My life will never be the same. Your life will never be the same. And we didn't get fucking consent. And that goes across the board. We are in the most unconsensual relationship with the United States right now. Ugh.
Okay, so that's actually interesting for a couple of reasons. So I'm going to sidetrack for a second. Lenora, Jake, and I, and Gabby were talking this week about consent and this particular issue because I think it is, like, how can you consent when someone doesn't give you all the information so that you can knowingly consent to something? And that happens a lot when you get into some of these controlling, abusive, narcissistic relationships, right? When you're with an abuser that it may not be physical abuse, but it is definitely abuse on some other grounds. And you don't give consent to that because you didn't know you were signing up for it. But sure. We were talking about, in particular, a place, I don't know if it's a company or a website out of Australia that is drafting like consent agreements, and then you worry about the legality of those consent agreements.
I can talk about consent agreements.
Okay.
Yes. Let's talk about them.
Let's talk about them.
Yes. So consent agreements, this conversation, I want to say that I first heard about it around 2016. So it's been 10 years that I've been hearing about it. It's abusive. It's manipulative because I can have one thought one day and be a totally different person. So I can't agree to what I said the other day. I was in a different mind state, right? And so being able to go, well, you said on November that you would give me a blowjob anytime. Well, today is December now. It's a different day. I don't feel like that. And so you can't have something because consent is supposed to be ongoing. You're supposed to be able to check in and adjust as needed. So therefore, it can't be consensual if you have to lock in. So if people want to get legalities, get your dictionaries, look up what consent is. That can't be ongoing if it's a locked in contract. Then if that's the case, then it's null and void, right?
I don't think you can legalize. I don't think those would be enforceable. I just don't think so at all.
I don't either.
An act or a pattern of behavior, like in terms of like trying to enforce a contract saying, okay, well, you give me this on this day for this, if there's no exchange or anything like that, or is it more like atmospherically, like I have access to you, you have access to me. Like I'm trying to wrap my head around what a consent agreement is.
It's acts as my understanding for a lot of it, because
I would say it's both, because you get to create what kind of abuse you want, what kind of control aspect you want. Think of 50 Shades of Grey, right? He had a contract. And people also, you know, I think that was when the conversation started also, like a BDSM contract. I personally think the BDSM community, we should look at more. They're actually teaching us a lot of things because they were talking about consent way before and talking about negotiations. And I think negotiations is something that also should be chatted about because that's also ongoing. You should have negotiations in your relationships because negotiations, check-ins, whatever you want to call it, but it should be communication. And so you can't have active communication if you're like, well, you said this, it's period. Like, no.
That seems to be more of a liability concern than it is a consent concern, correct? Meaning that if something goes wrong, I have this contract to say, no, you agreed to this, and holding their hand to the flame. That's what I'm not really understanding. Like, why, if it's going to be a verbal and understanding, why do you need the contract to enforce it unless it's to basically CYA when it comes to anything that would possibly go wrong?
The contract is abuse. It's an abuse tactic. I think regardless of how it is, if you're going to tell me that consent is active, but if it's on this paper, it doesn't matter because you've consented to it once. And so they're saying, if you agree to it one time, this is going to work for the next part of our lifetime because you put it on this paper. But I might have a stomachache and be like, no. And they're like, but you said yes. So it can't be consensual. And it also might be a liability.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking on the flip side, because what I do for a living, and I can think of prenuptial agreements where they include in those prenuptial agreements, you have to have sex with me this many times. You have to give me oral sex this many times. I don't know that happens so much anymore, but I know back in the day that was included in prenups, right? Like in order to perform your wifely duties and for me to give you X, Y, and Z, there are expectations of what you are required to do. And I mean, and that's not consent. And then there was a whole sect of the population that believe once you get married, you lose the ability to say no. I'm like, when did that happen? But there is definitely a subsect of the population that thinks if you are married, you cannot say no. I've seen it in court.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of husbands that are like, I do own you.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I do. It's right here. I blame, and I'm going to say this, so sorry for those that are listening, I do blame the church. I do think for some people, because it is created, we are raised up. Again, I was raised a Baptist. Okay. My family's from the South. But also we are taught you're supposed to be raised up to be this wife. You're supposed to be smiley. You're supposed to be soft. You're supposed to listen and do all this. And you support your husband.
You are to make your husband happy.
Yeah. And that's your job, which is that also sex, which again, oh, here's another thing. This is also why there's the control aspect is also why a lot of these goddamn states are fighting to keep it so that you can marry children. That's also not lost on me.
Oh, and that's a whole other issue because, you know, again, we were talking about this week is this Ohio case where you had the girl that was, she's now 33, married off at 15, had her first kid Right. 2 months after the marriage, which tells me because he was older, right? I think he was 18. Sure. She was 14 or 15. So in order to avoid the criminal responsibility, parents signed her off to get her married, right? So then it's no longer rape because it's your wife. And so they had their first of 16 kids, although apparently they had enough set of conjoined twins. 16. Oh, you've not heard this case?
No. Oh, I know about another one. Or oh, others, no, this, there's multiple.
They had 16 children found in a 12 by 12 room. The oldest was 18. The youngest were, Yes.
I did. Yes. I haven't looked into it. I've been busy with black children being hung in trees. I've been busy.
Because I used to, well, we're going to talk about that next, but I used to be a CPS judge. So in addition to running the domestic violence protective order side of it, I did a stint as CPS, and that's a whole other ballgame. And so I see these cases with like these children, and then I look at the mom who was 15 when she got married, clearly has been pregnant since she was 15 because she's 33 and has given birth to 18 children, right? So she's been pregnant since she was 14 or 15, probably nonstop. And you look at her pictures and her eyes in the mugshots, and you look at him and you look at his parents, and then you figure out that her parents signed her away to this man. Like, you should not be able to consent to underage marriage. Then, but then you get in the whole discussion of what is underage, because some states in the South have very low ages of consent.
And they're fighting to keep them, which is questioning why do you need to marry an 11-year-old?
You don't. Like, back in the pioneer days, okay, maybe. But I'd also suspect back in the pioneer days, girls matured probably a whole lot sooner than they mature now. But what do I know? I'm just a lawyer. Oh, yeah, I mean, listen, it's been a week where I'm just like, okay, and here's what drives me nuts about this case. And this goes back to where I wish more people would say something, because I think everyone's of the mindset now of, it's not my business. I'm not going to get involved, right? Like, I'm not going
to
do the right.
Involved.
Right. Like, no, let me get involved. But a lot of people are now saying, I'm not going to get involved. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't concern me. So people do what they want to do. You know, the only reason they caught this guy or they caught these kids in this room, it was because they went to go execute an arrest warrant on dad for indecent exposure. They had no clue that there were 16 children living in a 12 by 12 room. None. They found it by accident. So that's a whole, ugh. So consent and underage, it shouldn't be allowed in any state. This is not political. That's just, come on, guys. Let kids be kids. Let kids be kids.
No, it's not political. I think it's just, if we want to be pro-life, what are we pro-life for? What do we just want to push these babies for? Because it's not because you want to keep them safe.
No,
if that was the case, you would be supporting all these kids in the community, all these children that are in the system that are continuously being harmed. And so it's not about that. It is, again, about control and overpopulation of these things. And I will also say that we are in a uptick of racism. And I also think for some people, there's this idea of we need to create more white people because white people are minority right now. So we have to create more. Black people don't care. We are busy. We don't care. But it is the ideology. And again, full circle, this is also why in these political times, I had to become political. That pissed me off. I don't want to read about things and do things.
I don't
want to
be political either.
Pissed. Piss. I'm trying to be a hottie on a boat, okay? But no, I can't be because the world is shitty.
You can still be a hottie on the boat, like on the weekends. Just go be a hottie on the boat.
I'm still mad, though. It's carrying over till tomorrow. But the uptick of these bodies being policed and these bodies, this is not new for Black people, right? Like the ways that Black women's bodies have been policed and used and no one cared, raped, pillaged, all the things to create more populations or to control. It just looks different to some people. Now they're surprised. We've been saying it for years because we had history books. I don't know, history books, not these books. The history books are disappearing a bit. But this isn't new. It is such an interesting time in the world where I feel like people are very comfortable in their shitty behavior, in their racism and all their isms because of other reasons. And so it is a very unsafe time to be in these feminine bodies. It's an unsafe time to be a Black bisexual woman in this body. It is a lot happening. We had multiple children in the last few months. And I say children because 18, 19, 20, you're still a child to me. I did it. It's you about 26, 27.
You're,
you get a little
you're still a kid until you're like close to 30.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, really. Like, I've got three boys. And the 23-year-old thinks he's a man. I'm like...
But it is so much happening that it is a lot of these children, a lot of Black children. I think people are dying every day. That is what we know. But there has been an uptick of Black children being hung.
Okay, tell me about this. Because I actually have not heard about. And so I'd actually like...
When you go to my Instagram, everyone. I've got videos of it, of me being angry. There are multiple children... and I have a list of their names. I just had it open to tell you, and I will go back here. I have a list of their names of children that have been recently found hanging in trees. People of different races commit suicide in different ways. Because of the history of lynching, that is not the highest way that Black people are going to be killing themselves.
And well, I don't even think that'd be on the radar for doing it that way, honestly.
Exactly. Exactly. And so all of these children, they've all hung themselves. No. To me, and everyone's like, oh, we don't have any more answers. Case closed. Autopsies, all of these things. We just had, there's an uptick in anger. And I think that there's such a pressure cooker that all these things are happening. Nolan Wells just went 4th of July weekend on a boat with some friends. He was, I don't know, he might have been the only Black person there if he was one of five. He did not come back from that boat trip, but everyone else did. When they came back, people's social medias was erased. One of the kids' moms was a judge. Everyone got lawyers, but no one knows what happened to him. That doesn't make sense. Also, we're taught differently. If you go somewhere with somebody, you come back with them.
Right.
I think that...
You stick together.
I don't know what the kids... You stick together. I'm going to go with so-and-so. No, you're not, because I don't want to hear your mom's mouth. You're getting in this car with me. But I want to also note, these are all children. They are vulnerable. Again, as you said, you got a 23-year-old, silly, just probably doing silly shit all day. You just be looking at him like, I know I taught you better.
Like, he's a paramedic, so he's actually saving lives.
He's a little better.
But then I see the nose bull ring that he has, like his septum ring, and I just want to pull it out of his nose.
I just took mine out. I'm on his side.
Well, hang on. I had a tongue piercing in law school twice. I've done it all. I've got a tattoo, two tattoos now. I've done it. Been there, done
rebel,
that.
Rebel you. You rebel.
I know.
Sorry.
I'm just like, but I see him. I'm like, can I just pull it out? I just, ugh.
My mom said that. And she was like, what is that? I took it out. It's a piercing. That's what you do. You get it.
I get it. I just like, dude, you're a pig. No one wants to see the person saving their life with a fucking bull ring in their nose.
Yeah. I say all this to say there is such a vulnerability with the people that are being harmed because they are young, they are open, and also they don't want to believe that other people want to harm them. They want to exist and have fun. Again, talking about looking over your shoulder.
In youth, you're invincible. No one's killing you in your youth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's only when we get older we realize, oh shit, we're lucky we survived our youth. Like, and got out of it unscathed.
How did I not die in the back room of that random place? And they
listen, I think all the stuff that we did at bonfires, I'm like, how are we still alive? Out in the desert? Because we lived out in far west Texas, and it was a desert. So we would have to go bonfires in the middle of the desert, y'all. Bunch of teenagers with alcohol, fire, and no supervision. How someone didn't end up dead is beyond me. By the way, like, I'm getting my mojo back. I'm like, oh, fuck, people, watch out.
Where did it go? It's always there. It just was an
It went away for many years.
The battery was low.
All right, so you worked in wrestling. Is that right?
I did.
Okay, tell us about your wrestling involvement, because I'm dying to know.
Yeah, people actually, they're like, rape, cool, but wrestling, tell me about it. I'm like, it's fine. So I worked in professional wrestling at a company That still exists. I'm not going to... AEW. It's fine. Who cares? I worked at AEW for 2 years. I was a mental health liaison. How I got it, I'm friends with wrestlers. I have loved wrestling. I had a gap. I found wrestling in 1996 when I was 9 years old. And then I stopped watching wrestling because then I went to college and I found alcohol and dick. Very distracting in college. Who has time to be watching wrestling? Michelle didn't have time. I didn't have time. We're busy. And so I got back into wrestling and I peeked through, but I got back into wrestling in 2019, which is so like, oh. But I had start going to indie shows. For those that don't know, indie shows are smaller local shows. They're not like the larger companies, the WWE, TNA, AEW, NWA companies that have been around for quite some time. So in 2019, AEW was created. It's younger, fun, all these things. I was like, I want to work there. So I had a friend who texted me who actually worked there, and he was like, we just had this guy come in. His name is Dr. Reese, my little old Jewish man now. And Dr. Reese, and he came and taught, and he's going to be creating a mental health program here. And I was like, that's crazy. And my friend goes, so I gave him your information and he's going to email you. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Why?
The fuck for what? And basically when I talked to Dr. Reese was already in his 70s. He looks like a psychiatrist, like a little white-haired psychiatrist. A good time. And he basically was like, I looked your stuff up. I talked to Peter. He says you were great. Listen, everyone doesn't want to talk to an old white man, and I need someone else here. And I was like, they don't.
Fair point.
Wow, it's crazy. Fair point. Especially in wrestling. Wrestling is a very carny energy.
Someone's told me that the wrestlers really like to date each other. Is that accurate?
I think yes and no. I think it's any job. It's the people that you spend the most time with.
That's a good analysis. I'm not sleeping with any wrestlers I know.
But I think it also depends on the company. WWE, you're on the road almost 200 plus days a year, right?
That's nuts.
This company, AW, you know, sometimes if they have a Wednesday show, they have a Saturday show. So you are not going to work both. So you get time with your family and all these things. So it's very different. But what I got to do was I finally showed up. They let me in. I was a mental health liaison. What does that mean? I was the person that people would come and talk to, right? Somewhat like a therapist, more like a life coach, because I am not a therapist. This is also what I like to remind people. I did study marriage and family therapy, and I said, ooh, too many governing laws. That's not how I want to work. If someone calls me as a survivor, and they're like, I need to get out of here. I need some things. I'm going to pick them up and I'm not going to report to anybody. Like, I want to be able to keep people safe and not have to report back. Did I study all the things? Do I have lots of papers in different things? Yes. It's on my social media if you want to know about them. But I got to work with these people. I would be on the road with them. And so what a day would look like is I'd wake up, get on the bus, get to the arena. For me, I'm an energy person. So I would walk the space, see where everything is. Where's my office? See where the food is. Where's the bathroom? And then they would come in and be like, Jim's here. Can I talk to you? And I would work from the first person to see me until it was time to go. Because in this industry, there's not a lot of people you can trust. It's a carny industry. There's someone always trying to get above. And you will hear that in any interview with a wrestler, that I have a lot of people I work with, but I don't have a lot of friends. And yeah. So they also don't have a lot of people they can trust or talk to. And then again, that gift I have, as we talked about, I would come in and I also was very intentional. I didn't show up as like chill and quiet. Let me also note, the day I started working with this company, I signed my contract. That morning, my dad died that night. So I worked at this company while I was working through my grief, which was honestly the best thing, the best distraction. You're traveling all over to different cities and I'm just processing. The question people ask me the most, oh my God, well, what do they talk about? And I'm like, are these not regular people? That's not who they are in real life. They have regular issues. They have family. They have relationships. They have job issues. They have bodies. They have, you know, I figured out I'm bisexual. I've had many conversations with people about sexuality. And I think it also matters the way I showed up, which is what I was saying. I would show up, my tattoos are out. I have a full, scattered sleeve. I have tattoos everywhere. I had my septum. My hair changes as a black lady. It's colored differently. Like, I showed up authentically, and that allowed people to show up authentically as well in ways that they couldn't. I know lots of secrets in mental health. Therapists are secret keepers. We just hold things. Mental health providers just know things. But it was such a fun time. I got to learn a lot. I took away about 3 people. I think that's a win. If you work somewhere and you take away 3 solid people, that's a win.
Yeah. That's a win.
Basically, it's only been a few years since intimacy coordinators have sort of taken a hold, and they've basically been put in a position to understand what that even means, right? Could you give us a definition of what an intimacy coordinator is and how that adapts to what you do and how you consult for film and television?
Yes. So I actually co-own an intimacy coordinator training company called Cinematic. And so an intimacy coordinator is someone who is on set, who is a liaison between the actors and the film set, the directors. They are there to support the actor first. Sure, there's times for them to support other people, but they are there to support the actor beforehand. They meet with them beforehand, go over the scenes, check in with what they feel comfortable doing, not doing, what positions they might be comfortable doing and not doing. They also can possibly assist with choreography to make the sex scenes look real, make the intimacy look real. I also want to always note that intimacy coordinators are not just for sex scenes. Yes, they are used for that, but intimacy isn't just about sex, right? Like, you can be used on a death scene. That's very intimate and very hard for some people. Murder. That's very intimate. My mom was stabbed to death. It's very intimate stabbing, as we know, right? Like, so there's different variances.
Stabbing is a whole other level of intimacy. Fuckery. Like, it is. So I was listening to, side note, we'll get back to it. Mm-hmm. I was listening to Crime Junkies with Manning. My 11-year-old loves listening to the podcast. And a woman had been stabbed, and it was like 60-something times. And they couldn't figure out what the death instrument was. And I told him, I said, it was a screwdriver. He's like, how do you know? I said, because in order to stab someone that many times, there is a whole other level of anger, hatred, emotion that's going into it. Like, the puncture wounds were so bad, they'd actually gone through the skull to the brain. And that's, I'm like, crazy. And the only thing you're going to get that kind of force with is typically going to be a screwdriver. Because I had a protective order case, Deidre Ingleton, where her ex-husband walked through the protective order and stabbed her 28 times with a screwdriver in front of her hair salon in Northeast El Paso. But yeah, so when you were talking about that, I was like, oh, screwdriver? I'm like, knife, stabbings? And there's a whole other level of anger if you have the ability to stab someone.
1,000%. Because you have to feel that.
You that have to feel act. So anyways, sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah, but I didn't even think about that as far as intimacy coordinators go. I mean, that like, to me, it's like, well, duh, why did I not think about that? But no, that makes a whole lot of sense.
So my business partners are intimacy coordinators, Yehuda and Jacqueline, and they're always on set doing different stuff. And when we teach our students, we have an online program. So it's predominantly online. I'm a lifetime student. I just got a master's degree in legal studies because I'm petty and I need to know the things. Michelle, you Google, I get a degree. Okay.
I love it.
So what
I think is probably the smarter route than me.
I don't know. I'm in debt. Intimacy coordinators, this is a very much newer in the 2000s, but it is something that has always been needed. It's always helpful to have someone that can be your liaison that takes away that power dynamic a little bit. And so in our program, we have 3 modules all online. In the 4th module, you have to come to Los Angeles and do a 4-day in-person choreography training with us. And what does that look like? It is 10 to 6. You were in there. We provide lunch. I'm in charge of food. You eat well. But you're going to be learning how to speak to directors, how to do director calls, how to do actor calls. So again, in the program, we teach about communication as just being a better person. There's mental health in there. There's sex ed. There's trauma. There's all of these things. So you can go on set, again, is what an intimacy coordinator does, be able to speak and support in ways. They're also mental health trained because you have to have a mental health certificate. So be able to, if you are activated, maybe have someone to step out with. They're not therapists or anything, but they are there as a middle person. They are there to support the actor. They are there to make those sex scenes that you're like, I don't know, was that real? Do that. They want you to do that. They also sometimes help with prosthetics, with making some of those penises, look real. Sometimes people don't want to use their own genitals. Maybe they don't want to
see
their nipples.
I'm so intrigued by this. For
some of those
so
nipples you've seen, not theirs. Some of those vulva.
Really?
You cannot show labia. You have to have hair, so they have merkins. You cannot touch genitals. If you're touching actual genitals of another person, that is now porn. And so they're there to make sure people get to stay safe. They get to consent and show up. So what my work looks like, I am not an intimacy coordinator. So when they are doing things, they cannot stop a scene. They can't do anything. I work on television and film in two different ways. So sometimes I work with Lenora, my red, as I call her, and we work with true crime survivors. She does a lot of one thing. I do a lot of another. We meet in the middle with our skill set. And so for me, I'm there to check on their mental health. I want to see where they are. I want to see what grounding tools they have for themselves. You know, are you even able to tell the story? So we check in, we create a code that if they need to step out and they do one of these, I'm going to stop it and they're going to get grounded. Because if it's a documentary, you need them. You need a whole person. And we also need them to be sane. We also make sure that they have care after. If they're going to do it, do you have a therapist? What do you have? We're going to make sure you have something after this that you film, you land with. And it's not something that's just like a one thing, because what people also don't think about is when they're recording these shows, these documentaries, podcasts, whatever, you record it, you tell your story, and then it comes out. That's a whole different level of vulnerability that people don't think about. So we're also there to support there. Second, I consult on like films and scripts. I'm actually consulting on an adult animation right now because one of their characters was sexually assaulted, and it's like a through line through their story. And so they wanted it to be realistic. They're like, I taught a whole class before they even started writing about what it looks like to be a survivor, as you mentioned, what it might look like, what it might not look like. Here's some options. Here's some language. Here's stereotypes and how we like defunct them before they wrote. I also get to go in the writer's room. So y'all come in. I was just in the writer's room with them. They're like, here's our pitch. What do you think? How would this look more real? How would we tell this story? How do we support survivors? So I get to do that. That's also so fun. I love consulting.
I'm like,
more
it
so
sounds
now.
Like, can you come do my job for a week? I'll come do yours. It sounds like much more fun. It's an amazing story. It's really cool. Like, 'cause you are really authentically you, which I'm a big believer in that. Although I'm a little jealous of the hair things. 'Cause like I have now like really developed a like for hair pieces because it makes them doing my hair so much easier in the morning. But thank you. Where can our audience find you? 'Cause I think one, they're going to want to find you. Two, I'm going to want to find you. And so where can they?
TraumaQueen.love. That is
dot love?
The website. Dot love. L-O-V-E. Tending the garden is tendingthegarden.love. And social media, Jiminika. There's only one Jiminika that I know. And that's me all over. If you can spell it, J-I-M-A-N-E-K-I-A, you can find me. And the social media for Tending the Garden is tendingthegarden.for.sas. It's so long. And then also, if you want to know about intimacy coordinating, you know, we also are putting on a film festival. I'm doing a lot of things in different places. Cintima, C-I-N-T-I-M-A. I do stay busy. I wish other people in my family knew how busy I was. They're like, you're always working from home. Keyword, working. But it's, you know what? One of the things is too, is people will be like, you do all these things. It's the same through line. It's just about helping people in different capacities. And it's about, for me, it's like, how do I get in places where other people aren't? Wrestling, people aren't doing that. What I get to do to like help an adult animation or like television to like have a survivor look and be like, oh shit, this does feel real. Like I understand versus like, that's dumb. You know, it's like the behind the scenes thing. I'm not an intimacy coordinator, but I created the program. If you go on it, my face is all over it. I work with these people. I get to like give them energy to like learn how to communicate, figure out boundaries and all these things, and then go do that in the world. So it's all about how do I show up for people in a very interesting way, I've slowed down a lot. I have also figured out you don't have to do everything, but there are things that I like to do. I like to do like bigger classes. I like to teach like that. I like the consulting and the different things. I would want to do more of that. Like, I love podcasting because I get to run my mouth and meet cool people. Like, there's so much as an option, but it is all about helping people. So that's always my through line.
Tell me this, because I'm just curious. Are you an empath?
Yes. Okay. I think there's yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah. So how do you drain what you absorb?
Yes. That's what I was going to say. Look at us. We're right here. I do a lot of different things. Now I do a lot more physical movement again. The gym has actually been helpful for a minute. I moved back in to help my grandmother, and she also drains me. She is a lot of a lot. And so I started going to the gym just to get away and just walk. And now I'm like back to lifting weights and like stretching. That's really helpful for me. I also love spending time with the people that are fun for me, like my friends. I love spending time with them. I am a, I'm a community person. My friends will tell you if something happens, I texted, I took Graphel. We're all in it together. So I'm like, Lenore,
girl, I did a face plant this? On Bourbon Street after leaving the Absinthe yeah. bar. True story.
I'm like, listen. And so that's really important to me. Also, I love body work. I am a body work girl. Massages. Last year, I was really into four-handed massages. Two people at the same time. Ooh, amazing. And now I'm getting more into like Korean spas. So I'm like, again, slowing down again and being more in touch with my body. And also just the awareness. Like for me, I feel like I have lost a lot of my feminine touch for myself. And so now I'm like, no, we want to like soften a bit and do these things. I'm like, this is expensive. That's why I stopped doing this shit. But
it's expensive to be a girl.
So hard. You got to maintain.
Really? Really?
Listen. My hairdresser saw one of my reels.
$200.
Oh God, don't even get me started on what it costs to do my hair, right? And because I've got like lots of white, my hairdresser's like, he's like, it's time. He's like, I gotta cover your roots. I'm like, see? So he literally will troll my social media to know when it's time to do my roots.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Thank you for joining Jake and I and Jiminika on today's episode of Love, Lust, Law. If you want to reach out and find out more about what's going on in my life or Jake's life, you can find us on all social media platforms at not only Love, Lust, Law, but you can find me at Attorney Michelle Locke. And you can also email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, Michelle is with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, with no T for that. I hope you all enjoyed. Thank you for subscribing and listening, and look forward to next week.